Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the NDA webinar on new opportunities open up for funds in IFSC. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nishit Desai, founder, Nishit Desai Associates. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you so much for the kind introduction, and welcome all friends. This morning, I know all of you have a very, very busy time at this point in time, but thank you for joining us in so many numbers. Today, we have an interactive discussion on new opportunities that are opening up for funds in IFSC, International Financial Services Centers. And today, there is only one in GIFT City, Gujarat International Financial and Technology City, and a couple of other more might be coming up in times to come. But at this point in time, I think GIFT offers an excellent opportunity to consider setting up alternate investment funds, hedge funds, and other kind of funds in that, let us call it, a nice, magnificent city. On the panel today, we have with us the chief of GIFT City, Mr. Deepesh Shah, my good friend. Thank and you. We have known each other a long time, since almost the time GIFT City came up. His huge experience right from the start. So he has total insight into the GIFT City and he can tell you more about it. We have Richi Sancheti, who leads our fund formation practice globally. And along with him is Nandini. She's also a senior member and leader in the funds practice group. And of course, everything, you know, at last comes down to tax. So we have Rajesh Simon. He's a globally renowned international tax expert. And he leads our tax practice group as well. So I would request, Richi, can you just tell us a little bit about what has come in a few words? Sure. And then I would like Deepesh Bhai to tell us a little more about not only what has come as regulation, but also a little bit about GIFT City. That would be very helpful.
Sure.
So Richi, just tell in a minute or so,
sure,
you know, what is this circular about? What are we talking? And then maybe we can quickly jump on to Deepesh Bhai.
See, I think to summarize, this circular goes to the heart of why this entire GIFT as a model has evolved. To begin with, India definitely felt the need to have its own, captive, so to speak, IFSC, International Financial Services Center. Now, International Financial Services Center, IFSC, like the way they operate in Dubai, London, and other major financial hubs, is an area which encourages inflow of capital from global sources and so forth. Now, to this effect, the Indian government, Minister of Finance have realized, and this has come out in different discussion papers, that how they would want to encourage capital inflow into the Indian territory, into Indian opportunities, and also the fact that they also recognized that there was definitely a loss of revenue plus loss of share to other, you know, IFSCs out there in the world, whether it is the European centers, whether it is Mauritius and so forth. So there was definitely a shift in thinking that can we evolve a regime in India which could replicate some of the offshore financial services center. And to that effect, the Indian government recognized a piece of area in Gujarat, FinTech City, earmarked it as Gujarat International Finance FinTech City, and recognized it under the SEZ Act. This obviously comes with its own set of indirect tax benefits and so forth. Now, the entire GIFT as a module has evolved under the IFSC guidelines issued by SEBI in 2015, where they recognized each of the different elements of financial intermediation in stages. To begin with, stock exchanges, clearing corporations, depositories were recognized. They all were expected to operate in GIFT by setting up subsidiaries. The next phase included setting up of trading members with respect to the stock exchanges and clearing members which are affiliated to the clearing corporations. The third phase finally came to fund structures, where while SEBI has already mulled over some of the rules that apply to mutual funds, which is a more retail basis of participation for investors, the guidelines that were issued late last week, revolve around the private pools of vehicle, which are regulated under the onshore rules of the SEBI AIF regulations, alternate investment fund regulations. Now, what SEBI has done is come out with its own brand of AIF regulations that would operate as far as GIFT is concerned, so that the global investors, the Indian fund managers, they can all look at how GIFT can be a significant driver of AIF module from a whole world global perspective, especially ease of doing business is concerned, because the objective here clearly has been to not just do a replication of AIF regulations as it exists in India in dollar terms, but also to see how we can harmonize some of the better principles that are followed on a global basis and how that can sort of evolve into a regime of its own as far as GIFT is concerned. So with that, I think the objective today with the discussion on the guidelines is to understand what was SEBI's objectives, what are the proposals being made, what are the gaps, and more importantly, how the fund management community can now look at this entire framework to make the maximum use of it, and what are the relevant tax exemptions and enablements which exist to support that.
So Deepeshwari, can you just tell a little bit about GIFT City? You know, of course, many of our friends on the webinar, you know, would have known about it, but it would be useful for many who are not fully aware of what is GIFT City and what is it about, and some kind of introduction would be very helpful.
Sure. Thank you very much. I think we thank the NDA team, because in India, this is the first webinar on an international financial services center for the AIF fund. So I think you've been always the leader in whatever you do, and we clearly see that the AIF regime coming on 26th of November, and here we are on the 4th December, the first AIF webinar has been getting off the ground in India. I think what has been said is very correct, that India needed a financial services center. It's been long into a demand of the financial services industry. What has been done in GIFT City is a vision which is emerging into a financial services hub. And this vision was provided by the Honorable Prime Minister when he was the Chief Minister, of how can India mark its presence in the global financial services centers. And the model adopted in the whole process is that how we provide both physical hardware and a software in form of a regulatory regimes which are more compiled to what is happening in other global financial centers. So it's a combination of two. It's a smart city in itself, providing a very high quality infrastructure for financial services and IT services to operate from. And on the soft side, it provides a regime which is comparable to other financial centers. So it's a mix of a center which provides you a right platform to operate international financial services. Let me just give you a policy objective which was emerged when the International Financial Services Center started coming up. And this was in the first budget speech of the Honorable Prime Minister, Honorable Finance Minister, in February 2015. And the speech very clearly said that India has recognized that it will come out with a policy framework on International Financial Services Center, and GIFT would be the first to get started in this whole process. And I think from 2015 onwards to 18 now, we are seeing a series of bunch of actions done by the Government of India and the regulators to enable the whole business of international financial services more efficiently than it was what was done previously. Now, let me give you an example, as to many of you on the call are aware that India is not fully capital account convertible, which means that every time you want to send money outside India or bring money into India, you need to follow certain rules and regulations under the FAMA regulations. whereas the zone here, which the government of India notified, is a full capital account convertible by the central bank. It provides you a perfect platform of it becoming a good inbound and outbound platform for people to utilize it as an international financial services gateway for India. I think what is important is its efficiency to deal with both resident and non-resident, because a lot of structures, as was informed in the opening speech, got created outside India for India. Like, people used to create structures in various other global centers to deal with to India business. And now I think the policy statement is, how do we complement those structures, you know, in terms of what has been done in other Singapore, Mauritius, Hong Kong, how do we complement those structures more efficiently so that those centers get connected to GIFT and we do a more inbound and outbound businesses more efficiently and in a more clear terms. So this is in a broad way the objectives and where we are moving towards.
Yeah, absolutely. David has mentioned that most geographies, large geographies, always have some kind of an outlet from where, you know, they can do international business a little more efficiently in a smoother manner. So if you look at the U.S., for example, the Cayman Islands and some of those islands, we're not talking about, you know, non-transparent. These are all now transparent jurisdictions. So there is a window so that, you know, you can have international operations. For example, U.S., if you set up a vehicle, say, in the U.S., and non-U.S. investor invests in the U.S. tech company, and again from there, if it's a non-U.S. business, the non-U.S. investor will end up paying U.S. tax and then again take it back. So why should he be investing into the U.S. vehicle? So therefore, countries like Cayman and many other ones, the Caribbeans are coming up, had come up in historically. So there was more window that they, what is legitimately not taxable in those jurisdictions, or operational freedoms in terms of corporate law, the trust law and stuff like that. That's all given in, say, so U.S. investors are more familiar with Cayman. Mauritius is more familiar to India and the people who are investing in India and also to Africa. Okay. Asia, Hong Kong, Singapore, or Malaysia, Labuan. Okay. So this number of jurisdictions have developed their window from where you can look to the world and move out to the world in a legitimate, proper fashion. I think that is why the importance of place like GIFT City. Now that this new regime has been introduced, one of the things in this session and after we finish our conversation a little bit, we would also like to have you give inputs, those who are listening on the webinar. I think feel free to give an input as to what can be done, because the idea is that it is this time when government would be happy and willing to accommodate things. Once it gets into normal system, then it becomes a legacy issue and it's very difficult to change. But at this point in time, it's just the right time. Whatever problems you have, we may or may not have answers to all the questions. But certainly the move is very important, very, very, very interesting. And it would be, you know, very helpful to give feedback to the government. Even though some feedback was taken, but I think much more will come now because we have more specific rules in front of us. So what I would like to do is to ask Nandini. As I said, she's from our funds team practice group. And what has this circular introduced in terms of offshore AIFs, okay, operating in IFSC? Can you just tell a little bit about that?
Sure. So when we say offshore AIFs, we actually mean AIFs operating in IFSC, pursuant to this circular. So I think to discuss this circular and to understand the overall framework on AIFs and IFSC as of today, we should look at it from two broad perspectives. One is step one of fund formation or registration, and the second is the ongoing fund operations. On the registration or formation side, again, we look at three main things. One is the legal entity which is being set up. Now, before this circular came out, while we had an idea of an AIF being set up in the IFSC, this circular clearly clarifies that the AIF may be set up as a trust, a company, or an LLP. Of course, there are questions out there on how do we register a trust, whether the trustee needs to be an operating entity under the IFSC, And these are questions which will be answered as we go along and start setting up AIFs and IFSCs. But at least the circular provides an enabling framework for structures of these kind to come up in IFSCs. Second, on licensing regime, it's important that this circular states that you go to SEBI and get your AIF registration in any one of the three categories, as you would even for an onshore AIF. Now, one or two important considerations in this respect is that when we go to SEBI to get an AIF registration generally for onshore licenses, we do acknowledge that AIF regulations are light touch and enabling, but SEBI officers and SEBI has generally introduced additional checks and balances in documents and you know, the marketing framework of the AIF from an investor protection perspective. Globally, alternative investment funds work a little differently. They have enabling multi-currency structures. They can track portfolios of different nature within the same product. We hope that the conversation with SEBI at the time of registration of the documents would also evolve. And SEBI would also put in place a separate team or a resource to analyze applications under IFSC. The third item with respect to registration is that while licensing as an AIF was already under the IFSC guidelines, now it clarifies that even a Category 1 or a Category 2 can register as an AIF. Earlier, given the investments could only be made under the FPI regime under the IFSC guidelines, effectively only a Category 3 AIF could have tapped that opportunity. Now even a Category 1 or a Category 2 can. Now from the perspective of raising, the IFSC guidelines clarify that an AIF under the IFSC can raise from foreign investors as well as Indian investors who are institutions or individuals subject to LRS limits or NRIs. However, with respect to NRIs and Indian individuals under the LRS limits, there is still a proviso somewhere in the guidelines to allow RBI to come up with more comprehensive rules to allow these individuals or institutions in India to participate in these AIFs. We would need to look at these rules more carefully to understand exactly how can we structure an AIF with both domestic and foreign participation in the IFSC. Now, with respect to fund operations, I have been separately tracking the updates on DIFSC and how DFSA has been updating the regulations.
That's the Dubai International Financial Center.
And one interesting approach that they have taken is not only do they have a separate unified regulator, which we are also considering for IFSCs here, they have also set up a separate legal framework which governs all operations under DIFC. So their civil laws are separated from the laws that operate under the DIFC. So they have a separate trust law regime, a contract act regime, everything is specific and bespoke for DIFC. That is also something we could consider, because if we are looking at AIFs under IFSC from a global perspective, a product that can be a global allocator, then we also need to update our regulatory provisions to take into account these global principles of alternative investment funds. The last point that I would like to make on the circular is with respect to angel funds. It seems that only investments in India are being permitted by angel funds. The language of the circular is not conclusive on this aspect, but a preliminary reading suggests that an angel fund under the IFSC would only be able to invest in India.
Yeah, thank you, Nandini. Dipesh, I think one small thing here that what is the kind of response you are getting at this point in time?
Yeah.
I understand that a lot of people are now anxiously looking forward to, but you're getting a lot of traction and how things are looking like that, you know. Of course, this is going to be, you know,
the booster for, exactly.
Yeah.
So in terms of where we are, we got the regulation issued by the all the regulators and the government of India in April 2015. Post that, 2016, government came out with a competitive tax regime for the zone. So effectively, we are two and a half years into our setup in the International Financial Services Center. Today, we have close to 168 units which are licensed by the regulator for operating in the SEZ and International Financial Services Center put together. This activities of International Financial Services Center is broadly divided in three main categories. One is the banks. So we have 12 Indian banks doing an offshore business from GIFT, which means that they are able to provide external commercial borrowing. They can help Indian companies acquire assets outside. They can help the overseas entities to borrow from them. So they have real, in a real sense, they have started an offshore services sitting in the IFFC zone. And that transaction is roughly around $16 billion now in between 2016 to 2018, which re-emphasizes the need of the international financial services to emerge as one of the major contributors to the services sector. We have another vertical, which is insurance. And there we have roughly seven entities licensed there. We have insurance company, reinsurance company, and insurance intermediaries operating there. And roughly around $30 billion of policy sum insured has been done from that zone by these entities put together. And the third is the capital market, which is one of the largest contributors in terms of the size. We have two international exchanges operating in GIFT. One is the Bombay Stock Exchange and the NSE. They both operate that international exchange. So the difference is that in India, they run a rupee exchange. In GIFT, they run a dollar exchange. So all their products are dollar-based. They have Indian stock futures listed there, which is in dollars. And they have global stocks like Google, Apple, and all available for trading there. We have a masala bond listing of close to $46 billion already been done in that zone now. Mm-hmm. So you have most of the Indian institutions which are listing overseas have started raising lots of masala bond listing from that zone. And that business has already touched $46 billion by now. And we have close to 100 intermediaries, which are SEBI licensed entities, which have formed a new companies there. And they are already licensed by SEBI to operate under an IFFC regulations. And they are able to trade into the IFFC products. And with the recent tie-up that the Bombay Stock Exchange and the National Stock Exchange, which are envisaging, the India INX, which is the international exchange, have tied up with CME. So the brokers sitting in the IFFC are now able to trade into a CME exchange from GIFT. And the similar tie-ups are being done by the exchanges for their global platform. So it is really making it a very enabling platform. And I must say that, you know, the support of the NDA in terms of getting this institutional arbitration, like we have a Singapore International Arbitration Center operating in that zone. And I must say on record that Nishit Bhai is here. I think his support and guidance has always helped the center to get this enabling framework done. So we now have a institutions operating in GIFT to use actually a SEAC platform also for their business contracts, which makes them feel more comfortable to do global businesses from the zone. We believe that now with this new circular coming in, we already have between 26 November to 4 December, at least 10 applications have already come in terms of various formats of businesses like fund administration. We have trustee company applications and we have fund to register themselves in that zone. I think the new excitement is just about starting with this fund industry starting in. But we are seeing a tremendous response on all the front from the market for this business.
Yeah. No, excellent. And I think Nandini mentioned and we did work on that. I would like to hear something about the Unified Regulatory Authority. What is it? And, you know, if you can just explain the purpose, you know, so that, let's say, ease of doing business and GIFT.
So I must tell that I think the Government of India and the existing regulators, they both really worked hand in hand to ensure that this International Financial Services Center gets started and gets the initial set of the businesses started rolling. I think that was very much needed, because if you have gone back to the drawing board and started creating new authority, it would have taken a lot of time to bring that authority in place, and you would have no data as to how the businesses are going about it. So with now this businesses and the volumes already in place, I think in the last budget, the Honorable Finance Minister announced that there will be a unified regulator for the IFFC in India. And I think it's a very logical step forward, because all the global financial centers that we examine, whether it is Dubai, which was said here, or you go to Hong Kong, you go to Malaysia, everyone has a separate regulator for an offshore business. And that is what has been envisaged under the unified regulator. We understand that the bill...
That means you don't go to different ministries for individual approvals.
Yeah.
And it's at one place you'll get all the approvals, overriding everything else, by and large.
Yeah.
There may be exceptions, but in general,
yeah,
the whole idea is to have quicker approvals, and senior officials of these ministries would constitute the regulatory authority.
Yeah.
So any approval is required that will encompass. You don't have to run to Delhi or elsewhere.
Yeah.
For all this, am I understanding right?
Sure, that is right. But I think what it gives the comfort is that there is a, in a real sense, a single window.
Yeah.
That you go to that zone, you whether you want to incorporate a company, whether you want to incorporate your unit, you want a license from the regulator, you want to do your compliances, everything emerges under one roof, and you feel more comfortable in terms of your dealing. So I think good part of the whole this exercise is that the existing regulators are fully supporting this new venture of a unified regulatory authority. And that's where we feel that, you know, there's a synergy of creating a separate rule-based, a specific regime for an international financial services center to emerge. And we understand that the Department of Economic Affairs is putting all their efforts behind it, and they are trying to bring the Unified Regulatory Authority Bill introduced and get passed as early as possible. I think that's a really logical step forward for any financial center.
Yeah. No, thank you very much. Coming back to Richie, you know,
right,
how does the circular impact the structuring of India-focused funds?
Sure. See, I think the key advantage that this circular brings is that under the same umbrella of an offshore AIF set up in GIFT, fund managers now have access to both the overseas pool of investors as well as the domestic investors who are participating through the liberalized remittance scheme and institutions which are specifically permitted. This vehicle is allowed to invest both in Indian opportunities under the different inbound regimes like FPI, FPCI, FDI, as well as they are allowed to invest in offshore opportunities without any restrictions which otherwise apply to SEBI-regulated onshore AIFs. So for the first time, a platform is now being given shape which allows the fund manager to pool global capital and invest on a global basis. Now, that frankly is a hallmark of a very seasoned, mature platform which operates in much more mature financial services centers. And definitely, you know, it seems that SEBI is now keen to look at it as a regulatory sandbox where they will allow a specific kind of regime to evolve, which will be little decluttered from the regulations that apply onshore in India, and at the same time give enough comfort to the global investors that you know, they could effectively pool capital in this offshore unit and invest in non-India opportunities as well. So there's definitely a lot to look at as far as this regime is concerned. There are a whole bunch of benefits that a fund manager being set up in GIFT or operating through a license through a branch or a subsidiary in GIFT, they get a whole bunch of benefits from a tax perspective, which I believe Rajesh will also discuss.
Sure, sure. So I think it opens up new opportunity for structuring AIFs in the GIFT city.
Absolutely.
Just a related question. What are the key regulatory changes you think should be considered, you know, for operating in AIFs?
Right. See, I think,
or
I think,
another AIFs.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. See, I think currently funds which are India-focused are either set up in India as an AIF. They may have a feeder vehicle set up outside India, but essentially the fund is the AIF in India. Or alternatively, it's a complete offshore structure which does not technically pool Indian capital, but global investors who are trying to participate in India under any of the investment programs. Now, this vehicle could be a combination of the two, the way it is currently being designed. But at the same time, there are some clarifications required primarily from RBI. The fact that Indian residents are allowed to invest under LRS scheme, which only limits the participation to individuals. If they can also sort of bring out rules on how institutions can invest in these sort of entities, because under current regime, participation by a manager or sponsor in the AIF itself could be seen as a financial services activity, which requires a 3-year existing track record, a separate approval from SEBI or RBI, as the case may be, to obtain all this. Perhaps they could have a more enabling framework where newly set up entities can also sort of sponsor these offshore AIFs. On the other hand, we also need a bunch of clarifications from the tax department that, once taxes have been paid at the offshore AIF, foreign investors who are participating need not get a PAN or file tax returns in India, as is the norm in Mauritius or any other overseas jurisdiction. Having said that, maybe as a phase 2.0 for this regime, perhaps we could have two kinds of AIFs operating in GIFT. One which is managed by Indian managers and sponsored by Indian entities, which are allowed to be investing in India at par with domestic AIFs. And accordingly, the FDI, FPI policies are done away with. Either that could be one framework they could look at, because those regimes, those funds would follow the entire AIF regulations the way it has been designed and currently expected out of offshore funds. Alternatively, or over and above, they could also mull over an AIF which does not have to abide by some of the sectoral conditions or the category 1, 2, 3 rules, which are allowed to invest on an overseas basis. But there they could limit how much Indian residents can invest, because I think the regulator also would not want to have a complete export of capital from India using the regime. So I think there are very interesting directions this entire framework can go, and it'll be great to see how SEBI, RBI and different agencies of the government come together to make this platform more workable.
Yeah. So having discussed some of the business opportunities and the regulatory broad framework and opportunities, of course, otherwise, I think it would be very important to turn to tax discussion. And may I request, Rajesh, can you just tell us a little bit about what are the tax advantages for AIFs that get set up in the IFSC or GIFSRI?
Sure. So I think there are two different paths that you need to actually look at. One is that the taxation in respect of the AIF itself, and the second one would be in respect of the manager, because both paths sort of become important. In the past, we've seen on domestic structures, especially in the recent past, we've seen a lot of challenges around, for example, structuring of the carry or the GST impact in respect of management of domestic AIFs. Those have been some real issues and concerns which have been raised. And I think what the IFSC regime sort of allows for is really, as far as the manager is concerned, it sort of smoothens the process quite a bit. You have, as far as a manager is concerned, let me first deal with the manager and then we can go to the AI. As far as the manager is concerned, once you have set up a unit in the IFSC, there is a specific tax holiday which is actually provided under the provisions of the Income Tax Act. It's effectively, it's two blocks of 5 years. The first 5 years, there is absolute exemption as far as income tax is concerned. And the next 5 years is a 50% exemption. So, and when you start thinking about it, effectively a 10-year period sort of gives you enough time to do probably two funds. So that's one big advantage which the IFSC regime allows you, which means that as far as income tax is concerned, you are actually absolutely exempt for 5 years, and the next 5 years it's a 50% rate. The second part around it is from a GST standpoint, where both the services which are provided by the manager and also in respect of the services received by the manager can both be effectively exempt, which means, and this sort of becomes important because you would tend to assume that even for entities which are setting up in the IFSC, you may still end up having a domestic subsidiary arrangement or which is very similar to what you have in respect of the offshore funds, because not everyone will be actually working out of the IFSC. You may have people who are outside the IFSC also, but who are supporting the operations of the manager. So that's the second bit, which sort of ensures that the GST neutrality is probably a very significant benefit, especially when we consider some of the recent cases in terms of the struggle and the sheer quantum of potential GST leakages which come in. Possibly the other thing that it actually achieves is that it ensures that there is less headache in terms of even potentially structuring of carry, especially when you have all of these exemptions coming into play. So at least from a manager standpoint, the exemptions work pretty well. The second aspect is around the taxation of the AIF itself. And I think this is where I think there needs to be some degree of what I would call clarifications which probably need to come out, because you have two conflicting provisions which are currently there in the Income Tax Act. You have Section 80LA, which talks about a unit set up in the IFSC and it enjoying exemption from income tax for the two blocks of 5 years. And you have the provisions relating to a pass-through status and taxation of an AIF, which is under 115 UB, which at least covers your Category 1 and Category 2 AIFs. So I think the question which will always come up is that, do I go under 80LA or will the provisions of 115 UB prevail? Because 115 UB is a non-substantive provision which sort of comes in. But even if you're going under 115 UB, at least as far as domestic investors are concerned, they're obviously going to be no different even from a domestic AIF structure, because they'd have anyway been taxed on a pass-through status. I think the issue will probably become much more critical, probably for offshore investors who are coming into the AIF, not so much in respect of AIF investments into domestic Indian companies, but in situations where the AIF is actually investing offshore. And under those circumstances, how would you actually look at the tax treatment under 115 UB? While 80LA, the absolute exemption is always there, but I think the 115 UB exemption becomes much more critical there, because potentially that is, since the AIF, even when it makes the offshore investment, the income is still received in India. So that still comes within the framework of the Income Tax Act. So from an offshore investor standpoint, obviously what they're looking for is absolute clarity that when an AIF is investing offshore, no part of the income can be brought to tax in India, and that they don't necessarily have to rely on treaty benefits, because that's not something, because the whole, when we step back and see what is the whole objective of this AIF regime, it was essentially to ensure that, listen, today you have your pooling vehicles set up in a Mauritius or a Cayman or a Singapore, but the idea was to say how much of it can we get onshore and how do we put in a regime which will ensure that whether an investor is coming in through an IFSC or whether an investor is coming through a Cayman fund or a Mauritius fund, they should be indifferent to it. And they should actually be try and be closer to where potentially the asset manager is actually located. So I think from that perspective, I think that area is an area which still needs some degree of clarity. I'm hoping that there are certain circulars which probably CBDT would come out with, sort of trying to put out the interplay between the various provisions and how do you sort of get certainty as far as the foreign investor piece is concerned. And also I think the last bit which I would add is probably to extend Richie's point, what investors would probably also be looking for is something similar to other jurisdictions whereby especially for the offshore investors, try and restrict everything to the AIF, and once taxes are actually being discharged there, if anything, nothing further, there are no compliance or other obligations which comes in on the investors, so that they are effectively on par. Because I don't think anyone is looking at a arbitrage per se as much as saying that let's just be on par to where we are if we have set up as an offshore entity.
I think thank you so much, Rajesh. Also for trustee and administrative services company, right?
You get the exemption.
You get exemption. So that will be another opportunity. A lot of things can be done, including calculation of NAVs and stuff like that, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the last point which I will probably add is also on MAT, because I think the IFSC enjoys a 50% sort of rate, even as far as MAT is concerned. So that probably also benefits both the manager and also all the other intermediaries. Let's call them the group of intermediaries, whether it's a trustee, whether it's the administrator, or whether it's anyone who's going back in services. So I think even there, they're sort of benefiting.
I think particularly for AIFs, it may be a good idea to extend the tax exemption to a level of 10 years to start with, another 5 years with 50%, because most AIFs would begin to earn income after 5 years. It's usually 7 to 10 years period, right? Or maybe 12 sometimes, depending. It is not just the 2-3 years you get it. Sometimes you get it, but most of the time you don't. So I think it would be useful to consider a little extension, especially for AIF. The nature of business is a long-term, and we want long-term investment in AI anyway. So I think that is one thought that I have. And while we are running out of time a little bit, I would suggest that, Dipesh, what is the road ahead for GIFT IFSE, if you have some thoughts and any other ideas, any other point you want to make?
I think
then we can open up to questions.
Yeah, I think in the opening remarks, you said you did compare with the other financial centers like Dubai, Hong Kong, Singapore, mm-hmm. and others. And we see the type of the activities and the institutions which emerge over a period of time in those centers really bring in the whole system of ecosystem of the financial services industry at one place. And I think that is what the Government of India is trying to bring this and make this as a vehicle. We already in a close to 2 years time, we are already 168, 170 entities there. And we hope that in next 5 years from now, we foresee close to touching, when the comparison was made with DIFC, a large number of institutions there. So we see at least, touching close to some 800 to 1,000 units coming mm-hmm. in next 5 years or so.
Excellent.
In this zone. And you can easily see, with more enabling, framework coming in, the business can multiply multifold, because with the limited business opportunities which is now in place, they already touched some $16 billion in banks, $1.5 billion average trading volume happening on exchanges, can easily multiply to a much faster and larger scale. And obviously with this ecosystem of law firms and consultants and, everyone able to operate from that zone, it's really going to help this emerge as one of the, fast growing and an emerging international financial services center. I must mention here that there is a Global Financial Services Center Index published by ZDN in London. And in their last report, which was released in September 2018, first time the GIFT IFFC got entry into the 104 centers which are ranked. We got a 77th entry in that center, as in one of the center which is now rated in that. In the said report, they also mentioned 15 financial centers globally which will become more significant, and we are listed right third in these 15 financial centers globally. Which
so global expectation is that we will move up
the ladder
and the new financial centers up the ladder.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Excellent. So I think I'm sure any of our audiences would want to visit, GIFT City. I'm sure you are there personally to help them
see
it. I've been there personally as well. I think it's a very good infrastructure, both above the ground and on the ground, and eco-friendly, and it's more like a smart city. Yeah. It would be worth visiting. So I think we all welcome you to visit the GIFT City and see for yourself how it's shaping up.
Sure.
And it's just about the right time to think about it. And with this, I would also now open up to questions. And anyone on the webinar, please ask any question, or if you have any comment or suggestion or any other idea, I think we are all here to help you. And most welcome. So welcome. We'll have about another 10 minutes or so for this question and answer discussion.
Sure. Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. We have the first question from the line of Chandru Badrinarayan from MSCI. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you for the very good webinar. Quite insightful. I just had, I think, you know, you dwelt upon a lot of things to do with taxation and the, you know, other elements which are very important. But let me just ask a different question. I was actually speaking to somebody in Singapore about, and one of the topic which came up was on the GIFT City. The person on the other end belonged to one of the largest investment bank. And I asked him, you know, would he actually consider setting up shop in IFSC in the Gujarat? So he said it is a developing situation. But more than anything, you know, one of his questions or concerns were that, you know, if he has to shift or, you know, any of his people have to shift to GIFT City, what about the kids' education? What about other infrastructure which are there? Is there still prohibition in GIFT City? If you have to do business, these things are, or if you have to live there, this becomes important element. So any responses to that?
Yeah, sure. Let me respond to that. In terms of the whole development of GIFT City, it is divided into three parts. One is the commercial offices, buildings. The other is residential. And the third is the social facilities. So in terms of social facilities, we already have the school right inside GIFT City operating, and that is operated by one of a very reputed Bombay-based called Jamnabai Narsimunji Group, which is one of the very popular schools of Mumbai and operating that. We also have an international school coming up there in the same premises. And the whole zone is surrounded with the knowledge corridor by the government of Gujarat. So there are, you know, large number of institutions in terms of Dhirubhai Ambani IIT colleges, then you have IIT Gandhinagar, then you have Gujarat National Law University, and in the whole bunch of the ecosystem of the for the institutions already operating from that zone. For other social facilities, we have just now, you know, operationalized GIFT International Center, which is one of the largest club, business club in that city. And you have to be in GIFT to actually see and believe it, that the type of the structure and the facility which has come up in terms of the social infrastructure is just one of the, you know, very high class of for people to come and operate from their zone. And it has all the social facilities in terms of restaurants, cafeterias and sports facilities, everything operational in that zone. But we do agree that GIFT is not Singapore. And it is emerging in terms of its ecosystem and in terms of its development. And we are conscious of the fact that when more and more international players come in, more emphasis is now being given to the whole social infrastructure development. So I think that is already going hand in hand. And it will only speed up when people like you come forward and start, you know, establishing your operations in that zone.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Deepesh. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sahil Gupta from ABC and Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So basically a related question on, so the SEBI operating guidelines say that the investment manager of an Indian AIF can set up a branch in the IFSC, and that branch can act as the investment manager to the IFSC, to the offshore IFSC, which is basically the IFSC set up in, AIF set up in the IFSC. So what kind of, so let's say, so the AIF regulations have a criteria that, you know, the key management team of the manager, investment manager should have this personal and 5 years experience. So let's say if the Indian, so the investment manager of the normal AIF, which is basically set up in India other than IFSC, meets that criteria. So whether that branch, you know, would need to separately meet those criteria, what kind of, you know, infrastructure would the branch need to have? Because, you know, as the earlier question said, you know, the concern, you know, the concern is that actual people moving, you know, how, to what extent, you know, actual people will need to be moved. So that's my question.
Sure. See, I think I'll take that one. The guidelines are not clear as to what is the personal requirement. All it says is that you should manage the AIF or sponsor it by setting up a branch in the IFSC. So a view could be taken that perhaps if you are operating through a branch, maybe the head office, so to speak, satisfies the criteria. But if, let's say, you are setting up a subsidiary, because let's say you are not already managing or sponsoring an existing AIF, and you are setting up a distinct legal entity to manage and sponsor that offshore AIF, then definitely a view could be taken that SEBI would insist on at least a 5-year track record of portfolio management before they allow the license.
Devish, anything add?
No.
Okay. Yeah. The next question.
Sure. The next question is from the line of Heman Jalal from Kuwarji & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I would like to get the clarity on permissible investment under Regulation 22.3, that security which are listed in IFSC, securities issued by companies incorporated in IFSC, or securities issued by companies incorporated in India, or companies belonging to foreign jurisdiction. Does that mean security does mean derivatives or index derivatives?
That is correct. So I think what the rules have now clarified is that if you are an offshore fund operating in IFSC, if you are investing in the onshore products, let's say you want to invest in Indian onshore products, it could be in those spaces in which an FPI is allowed to invest, because then you are talking about listed shares, derivatives, and so on and so forth. So your status or your eligibility as a foreign investor would be at par with that of an FPI. So wherever an FPI can invest, all those products should be possible for the offshore fund to participate in. And because they have clarified that outbound regulations do not apply, so accordingly you could also access not just the IFSC products, but even products outside the onshore and the IFSC setups.
Okay. And securities belonging to foreign jurisdiction also includes derivative products of foreign companies?
That is correct. Because the RBI FEMA framework technically does not apply and you are seen at par with any other non-resident, then as far as the outbound rules are concerned, there is definitely that much bandwidth available that you're not hindered by any other restrictions.
So for certain regulatory purposes, it is regarded as a foreign territory, not for everything, but broadly. Hmm. And that is a conceptual framework of GIFT City.
See, I think I'll just also like to point out that it's not, just to allow any Indian resident to export capital and invest in whichever opportunity they want. To begin with, the bandwidth is only stretched to individuals under LRS limit. So there is anyways a RBI limit prescribed on that. And for any other entity, which is, an institution or a corporate, they yet have to knock SEBI or RBI's door to get any bandwidth to invest in the offshore AIFs. So while there is some amount of scope on the products you can invest, but who all are eligible to invest from onshore structure to an offshore AIF, the limits are there.
Interestingly, if you have foreign investors and you have foreign opportunities, this becomes a good platform, basically, and that is the whole purpose of GIFT City. So, now this will allow Indian fund managers and others to explore the world. It makes it a little easier. And I remember when we developed the original framework for the venture capital funds and other ones in early 1990s, we had just no fund managers. And, in India locally. But today, not only there are fund managers, but they have built in experience, expertise, and the competencies that matches anybody else in the world, and with some experience from abroad, they've, you know, done an excellent job. Now this allows you to make this a platform to tap and globalize their activity. I think that is a fun part of the game.
True. Thank you very much.
Any next question?
Yes, we have the next question from the line of Nidhi Sachdeva, who is a student. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for connecting. Hello.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Thank you for connecting. Actually, my question has already been answered in the previous questions. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Thank you. We'll move to the next question. The next question is from the line of Kaushal Kakadia from Multiples. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello. I have three quick questions. One is to for setting up the manager and AIF in IFSC, what is the regulatory requirement for Indian managers like us in terms of whether approvals from RBI or etc. would be necessary, and with whether any substance requirements are prescribed, like in case of Mauritius or Singapore, if we are setting up, there are certain substance requirements. That is question one. Second was on the GST. Is there enough clarity that there will be no GST basis that the consumption criteria has been used? So if the AIF and manager are in IFSC, is that the only requirement, or are there any gray areas around that? And last, yeah, in the earlier question, you said that the FPI investments would be available for making investment into India. But we had also heard that the FDI investments would also be allowed. So there's a little confusion whether they can invest like an FPI or an FDI.
Sure. Kaushal, I'll briefly summarize some of the points, and then obviously we can connect offline. Given the very specific nature of the matter. So I think I'll just summarize from a more general audience perspective that yes, it is accurate to say that rules have not yet been put in place, and the regulator in this case is RBI, who has to clearly articulate that what would it take for an Indian entity to sponsor an AIF in GIFT. To begin with, to be a sponsor, there is a capital commitment of 2.5% of 5 crores. Which is about $750,000 required in case of 1 and 2 AIFs. And in case of Category 3 AIFs, it goes up to 5% or 10 crores. Now, in all these cases, there is clearly a remittance from an entity in India, which is going to put this as capital contribution at different points in time in an offshore territory entity, which is such as the offshore AIF. So there would definitely be a clarification required at RBI's end on offshore remittances scheme, that how would Indian sponsors and managers sponsor such offshore AIFs. So those rules are still awaited, Kaushal. I think that's point number one. Point number two, anytime you set up an AIF or offshore AIF in GIFT City, you still require SEBI's approval, right? SEBI still continues to be the regulator for those platforms. So in your original application that you furnish to SEBI, you have to clearly demonstrate how the manager has the portfolio management, bandwidth, track record, 5-year experience, and so on and so forth. So the entire application pack that goes to the regulator for an onshore AIF today, the exact same set of documents will have to be shared with SEBI even when you are setting up an offshore AIF. Whether you use the existing vehicle in India or you set up a branch or a subsidiary, the rules remain the same. All the boxes have to be checked as far as the competence of the manager is concerned. The third one on GST, obviously it is one of the key benefits which is available on account of the GIFT being an offshore territory. Having said that, there are still some nuances which we will discuss with you offline. The last one is that when I had remarked that, you know, an offshore entity or a GIFT AIF can invest in India under the FPI program, that was as far as the liquid investment strategy is concerned when you are investing in derivatives, which is what the last gentleman's question was around. In those cases, FPI is the relevant framework. But you're absolutely correct that when I'm investing in private company shares or I'm investing in those identified 8-9 sectors in which an FPI is eligible, then the offshore AIF can avail the investment scheme and program designed for FDI under FDI policy and FPCI under the SEBI FPCI regulations. So all three regimes are available. FPI was the relevant one for the last question, hence the reference to FPI program.
And just coming back to your original question on substance, you know, I think today's world has changed from what it was 10 years ago. So almost everything you do needs to have substance, whether written in the rules or not written in the rules. Even your documents, I think it is not about just structuring, as I mentioned, and we discussed. Anybody can go on whiteboard and draw structure is one thing. Translating the structure into a documentation is the real art, number one. When you do documentation, traditionally we did not pay so much attention, or a lot of people did not pay attention to what is called recital clause, which gives a background in a history and why you are doing what you are doing. Straight away you go into the agreement terms. Now, recital clause has become the most important part of all the agreements you do, because that is what would establish the commercial justification for the purpose for which you are doing. Because only it's a tax and nothing else, you know, then there could be a little issue. So articulating that recital, writing that story, is very, very important in every single document you do. I think this would be my advice to you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Utpal Shah from Shah Investors. Please go ahead.
Yes. This is Utpal. Thank you for taking my question. So I have a specific question. We are registered entity with IFSC as a broking member, trading member of both the exchanges. And one of the main issues is for us to be able to trade in other jurisdictions. So SEBI has still not allowed us to that. And because of that, the FEMA regulations don't allow us to transfer funds overseas to fund our overseas brokerage account. Does anybody here have any idea of whether this will be allowed at any point, or we have to rely upon the INX gateway to be able to do that?
Yeah,
Dipesh, I will.
Sure. Utpal, nice to hear from you. If I can respond, I think right now the regulator, the provision with the gateway which the regulator has opened is through a separate subsidiary of the exchanges which has been created in the IFFC, which is becoming an intermediary for the global exchanges. And that is the route under which the Chicago Mercantile Exchange CME gateway has just opened up through India INX. And I think more based on the comfort of the regulator and the more transactions emerging from this vehicle, I think it will be in a sooner or later, they will evaluate the different structures which can be permitted. But right now, I think the comfort of the regulator is through the routes available within the exchanges. And through that, they have opened up one structure, and probably one more such structures will emerge on this line.
If I may just continue on that, I'm sorry, but you know, the regulator opened this route up for the AIFs, for the investment advisors, for all the entities, but the brokers who have already set up shop in the GIFT City, whereas the other structures, I don't believe anybody has still opened up a shop in the GIFT City. And so there is some clear discrimination going on here, and I really don't understand what the reason is behind that. Because an investment manager, the investment advisor can route funds overseas, but a broker who is planning to do trades only in his own proprietary portfolio is not.
Yeah, I think obviously the regulators will be taking this up at an appropriate time. I'll discuss with you offline on this as to what we can do together.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Viral Shah from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah.
Hello? Mr. Viral Shah, you may go ahead with the question.
Yeah, hi. This is Viral from Edelweiss.
Sir, we can barely hear you. If you could maybe use the handset.
Hello?
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Yeah, hi. My question is, does an AIF registered in GIFT, if they was to invest in listed equities in India, do they have to seek an FPI registration? Because what the circular says, they may use the FPI route. So does that mean they can invest in an existing FPI or they can seek an FPI license?
So a fair view to take would be that no separate FPI license would be required, because as an AIF, you have already been scrutinized by SEBI, the regulator, directly, versus an FPI format where, you know, there is a delegated authority given to the custodians, the DDPs, and so on and so forth. So once you have already been, authorized by SEBI as an AIF, you anyways have a very robust system of reporting directly to SEBI, either on a quarterly or on a monthly basis. Then, I don't think it would be a fair view to say that there are two different duplicated regulations that you have to abide by. So I think AIF license literally is all that you need to green light your investments through either FPCI or FPI program.
Okay. So you're saying separate registration will not be required.
That is correct.
Okay. So then here in terms of taxation, then as you said, we are awaiting clarity on the DTA for any income accrued in India. AIF investing in India. Got it. Yeah, answers my question.
Thank you very much. That was the last question in queue. I would now like to hand the conference back to Mr. Desai for closing comments.
So thank you, each one of you, for coming and being so patient, listening to us and asking questions. One of the things we'll be doing in 2 or 3 days' time, we will be putting the entire conversation on our TV, what's called Nishit.tv, and we'll be sending you the link. And in any case, you can see that. So if you have anything more, you can, ask. At the same time, we are also going to have a repeat of this session in the evening at 7:30. If some people want to join or ask more questions, that's the thing. But there will be a repetition of the same thing will be repeated in the evening. And maybe if you want to tell your overseas contacts or other people, feel free to do so, because we thought that this time was convenient for people on the Eastern Hemisphere and some of in Middle Eastern countries. Evening is designed for right from California to New York to other countries, Western Europe. Countries, so Europe, whatever it is. So that's why we can cover up the globe, and feel free to, tell them to join. But once again, we must thank you so much for being here this morning in a virtual form, and I look forward to seeing you more and more again. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Nishit Desai Associates, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.